Again, I want to welcome you to Mill Creek. I'm so glad that you are here today, that you've chosen to join with us. And we're on a journey together this summer. Summer, I know schools have gotten started, but summer's not quite over yet. So you know where we are. If you've been here the last few weeks, we're in the book of James. You can grab your Bibles this morning. The book of James, towards the back of your New Testament, written by a guy named James, obviously, who was the brother of Jesus. James wasn't a believer. James didn't believe that his brother was who he said he was. And then a little bit later in the story, he becomes a follower of Jesus, becomes a believer in who Jesus said he was, and becomes a leader in the church, becomes a leader in the group of people that were followers of Jesus, would call themselves disciples of Jesus, and writes a letter to a group of Jewish people. They had grown up as Jewish in the Jewish religion, had the Jewish religion in their background, and in their culture, and they were kind of scattered throughout the Roman Empire. Writes a letter to them that we've been working through over these last weeks this summer. It's a great book, very practical, very step-by-step. Here's what Jesus said, and here's how we do these things. And it's just a great practical how-to book and how to walk the walk, how to take that next step, whatever that next step might be for you in your journey with Jesus, how to do it, how to live all of this stuff out. So we've just been spending some time in this book throughout the summer. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully you've gotten something from it. If you've been in and out with vacations and things, hopefully you jump online and you catch up with us. But just a lot of great things. Last week, we looked at this issue of time. And time is something that we're very aware of. We wear our watches. We watch the time. We watch the clock. Some of you are really good at that. You're watching it right now. Okay, you gotta handle on when this thing's gonna be done and what you got going on next. But James doesn't teach us last week as we looked at this idea of time. It's not about being aware of time. It's learning how to use the time that we have. Being aware of the fact that the time that we have is pretty short in comparison to the history of this world. That your life, even if you get an opportunity to live 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, that is a long time in our view. But James says in the view of life, in the view of God, in the view of history, it's very, very short. Let's be aware of the time that we have. Let's make the most of the time that we have, because we don't know how much we actually really have. He addressed a couple of problems that we have when it comes to time. If you were here last week, you remember these, hopefully. You can address a couple of issues that we have. One of those issues, we ignore God in the planning of our life. We kind of live life. We do life the way we want to do it. We don't really consider God in that. The choices of our life, decisions of our life. We kind of come to a fork in the road, and there's some choices that have to be made. And we don't always consider God in that. We tend to ignore him, actually. In the planning of our life, we don't really take into consideration what God might have for us, where he might want us to go, how he might want us to make those choices. And so sometimes one of the problems that we're going to have as it relates to time is we don't really pay attention. We ignore him in the planning of our life. We assume there's a tomorrow. This is a big one. We assume there's a tomorrow. We just naturally assume that tomorrow is going to show up, that I'm going to be there. That, in fact, not only do I assume that I know that there's going to be a tomorrow, I assume I know what's going to happen tomorrow. Like, I just assume that, you know, I've got a schedule and I got to work at this time, and we've got, you know, the kids that they got to do these activities. We got to go here. We got to run there. And we just assume that we're going to get it tomorrow, and we assume we know what's going to happen in tomorrow. And James is very, very truthful with his readers of this letter and with us in saying that time is a very limited commodity. You can't add more time. You get 24 hours, whether you're highly educated or no education, whether you're really wealthy and you have a lot of assets or you have none. It does not matter. It does not matter how much you have, how much you know. Time is a limited commodity. You cannot add more to it. You can't do anything to change it. And you don't know how much time you have. And it's easy to assume that there's going to be a tomorrow. And it's easy to assume that we know what it's going to bring. And James just says, hold on, time out. You can't live like that. You have to live with a better awareness of what time is. And we put off. We have a tendency to put off what we know we should do. We know what we're called to do. We know the path we should take. We know the relationship. We know the decisions. We know the choices. We know what God has asked us to do if we're following him. And sometimes we put it off. We put it off. We're going to wait till the kids are a little older. We're going to wait till the kids are out of the house. We're going to wait till they go to college. You know, we just kind of put off some of those things. And James just warns us about that attitude, warns us about that approach, because we don't know how much time. We don't know. We're like a vapor. We're like a mist. It's kind of sobering, but we've all been there. Like, we've all experienced times in our life, seasons in our life. We've lost somebody that we're close to, somebody in our family, a friend. We get that phone call, we get that little scare physically, you know, wondering what's going on. And all of a sudden, that idea of time becomes a lot more aware to us. But it's really easy just to kind of go through life and not be aware of time. And so James just challenges us about that. So there were a couple questions or a couple of ideas that we wanted to take away from last week. One of those is, if this is really true, like if what James says about God and about time is true, if what we read throughout the scriptures are true, that God has a plan, like that God is doing something, why wouldn't I want to be a part of that? Like, if God really does have something going on, if there's a bigger part to this story than just my, you know, daily life, 9 to 5, the daily responsibilities that I have, if God really does have a plan, if that's real, like, why wouldn't I want to be a part of that? He's probably got a better plan than my plan. You know, he's God, you know, and if you buy into that idea of God, you buy into that idea that there's, you know, there's something bigger than me out there, and what we read about in the scriptures are true. If that's real, like, why wouldn't I want to be a part of that? And if he does have a plan, and if you've hung around church long enough, you know, that's always like one of the big, big questions. You know, well, how do I know what his plan is? How do I know God's will? You become a believer for the first time, become a follower of Jesus. Like, it's like, wait, well, how do I know what God wants me to do? I'm not really deep. I'm not very theological. There's people who are a lot smarter than me. But maybe it's not knowing the magic code, the magic formula, the magic prayer, the magic words to figure that big question out. Maybe it's just simply asking him. Like, if God really does have a plan and you want to know what it is, why not just ask him? Why not just ask him what he wants you to do? And I know that's not really deep. And I know for some of us, you know, we grew up in church and, you know, this idea of finding God's will and finding the answer to God, you know, the question what God's plan is like big and mystical. It's a big mystery. We got to figure it out. And you got to be really super spiritual. I don't know if I agree with that or not. I don't know. I'm pretty simple. I think, why not just ask him? Like, why would he hide that from us? Why would he keep that from us if we really want to know and we really want to be on that journey with him? So just some big ideas and some big thoughts James has for us about the idea of time. This morning, it's really interesting, as James writing this letter and he's piecing this letter together for the readers of this letter and for the people that were initially get this and now for us today, he talks about this idea of time and then he shifts gears and he starts to talk about the idea of money and wealth. And he takes two really big topics that mean a lot to all of us. Whether you're a person of faith or not, money and time are really big topics. They cause a lot of stress in our relationships and families. They cause a lot of tension. They cause a lot of worry and anxiety. They cause a lot of fear. And so James addresses two really big topics for us, and that's what we're going to spend some time working through this morning. Now, as we do this, again, James is going to address a couple things, and I just kind of want to make you aware of that right off the top. As James works through this idea of wealth and money and how we view it and how we look at it and how we use it and all of that, he's going to address two really big lies that we have to deal with. Now, what I want to share with you very openly this morning, this is for people who call themselves followers of Jesus. If you would not call yourself a follower of Jesus this morning, if you would not call yourself a Christian, you can listen and you're going to learn some things and you can try to work through these things and apply these things and some of these things will work really, really well in your life. But if you're a follower of Jesus, these things are a big deal. These things really matter. And we live in a culture that James lived in a culture that did the same thing that we live in, that teaches us and feeds us a couple of lies that we have to deal with. One of those is the idea that my money belongs to me, that my wealth is mine. I earned it. I work for it. It's all mine. It's not anybody else's. I don't have to share it. I work really hard for this. You know, this is my pile, and your pile might be a little smaller than somebody else's, or your pile might be a little bit bigger than other people's, but there's this kind of lie that we live with as followers of Jesus that James is going to address that says that this is my pile. This is my stuff. This is my wealth. I've earned it. It's mine. But as a follower of Jesus, we're called to live with a little bit different attitude. We're called to live with a little bit of a different heart. And he's going to check us on that, and we're going to work through that in a little bit. A second lie is that I'm not accountable for how I manage it. This is mine. I can do whatever I want to do with it. It doesn't matter. These are my choices. This is, you know, my stuff. You know, I've earned this. And I'm never going to be accountable. That I'm never going to have to give an answer or a rationale or a reason for why I did what I did or the decisions or choices that I made. And that's James addresses that and says that's not exactly how this is all going to work for us. Now, I want to just warn you as we get into James chapter 5. The language that James uses in this part of this letter is probably some of the harshest language in the whole letter. Like, this is tough stuff. Like, what we're about to work through, the ways that James writes it, the way that he words it, the pictures that he creates for us is really hard. And it's going to be, it's going to be really easy for us, for a lot of us, to look at what he says and say, well, that doesn't apply to me. Like, that's not for me. That's not me. That's not me. But I think it's important for us to work through it, because if there's even a little sliver of truth of some of this in our heart, we got to look at it. We got to address it. We got to work through it. Even if it, you know, if in only 1% of this is true in our own heart and life, then we need to take an opportunity, because it's going to be really, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. And it's really hard and it's really harsh. Even some of you know, smarter people than you and me, as they look at what James is going to talk about and how he talks about it, we're not really sure if, like, he was addressing specific people that were within the church, or he's just talking about people just in general, kind of outside, and the people that were within the church were kind of feeling these things and feeling a little oppressed. We're not really sure exactly, you know, the audience through which James is talking to in this part of this letter. But I think it's important enough for us to look at, to just say, okay, is there any bit of me? Is there any little bit of me in some of what James is describing? Because if there is, maybe there's some things that we can work on. And at the end, we'll kind of work through a couple steps that we can take to just kind of check ourselves, check our hearts, and where we're at. So if you have your Bible, grab it. If you have your phone, tablet, whatever you're using for Bible this morning, or you want to grab one from in front, we're in James chapter 5. So towards the back of your Bible, towards the end of the New Testament, we find this letter, James chapter 5. And he starts off this little section by saying this: "Now listen, you rich people." Now, right off the bat, sweet. Like, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not rich. Like, that's great. Okay, this is for, obviously, for other people. Because for us, we think through wealth and riches as it's a feeling. It's like, it's something that you feel. We don't feel wealthy. We don't feel rich. And so, you know, this obviously isn't really going to apply to us. This becomes an emotion. Wealth and being rich becomes a moving target in our life. And you can think about that. When you're like in, you know, high school age or college age, and you know, you started kind of getting a job, you know, and you had a little money coming in, and you would look at your parents. You know, most of our parents were probably doing a lot better than we were at that age. You know, they had been, you know, in the workforce for a long time, and, you know, they had accumulated, you know, a house and some cars and, you know, stuff. And so we look at our little job, you know, that we're making, you know, a couple bucks an hour, $7 an hour, whatever. And, you know, we kind of get our first real paychecks. And we're like, well, obviously we're not wealthy. You know, our parents, you know, have a lot, and we always kind of think that they're, you know, way better off. And then we get our first real job and we start working. And there's some of us actually, you know, now we probably have done better and have more than maybe our parents did at the same age. But we never really feel wealthy or rich, because it's always a moving target. It's always somebody else. And when we get there and we get that job, we get that promotion, we get that raise, and we kind of get there and like, yeah, but then we see somebody else and they have a little bit more. And so wealth, when James addresses this group of people, it's like, ah, you know, this is good. This doesn't really apply to me. This doesn't really mean anything to me, because I don't really feel that. I feel like underwater. You know, I feel like student loans, we've got, you know, mortgage, we've got all kinds of other stuff. I mean, that's not me. That's not who I am. And then we do a little research, and you can do this on your own, but you go in, you do a little research, and you see who we are and what we have as Americans in comparison to the rest of the world. And all of a sudden, if we're at least open to doing that and looking at that and looking honestly at that, we can see that we actually, there's a lot that we have going for us. You know, there's a lot that we have that the rest of the world doesn't have. The resources available to us, the things that we have in our life that are available to us, even though we don't feel wealthy, we don't feel rich, we don't feel like we've reached that target, that when we look at ourselves in comparison to the rest of the world, we actually do have a lot. There's an interesting study that was done by Forbes magazine. And Forbes did an interview and research in a group of people that they had $1 million of liquid asset, cash capital that they could just play with in the stock market. Not $1 million with their homes and their cars, you know, and all their other stuff, business stuff, all, you know, put into a pot. Just $1 million to play with in the market. They can move it around. They could buy whatever they wanted to buy. They could do whatever they wanted to do. And they did a little survey, just interview of people that had those kinds of things and asked them if they felt like they were rich or wealthy. And high percentage, high into the 80% said, no, we're not. I'm not wealthy. I'm not rich. They had if we had a combined, you know, all of our stuff in a big pot, $1 million, we would be like, man, that's awesome. They had $1 million just to play with in the market, not even including anything else. And they didn't feel wealthy or rich. It's something that becomes an emotional thing for us. It's a feeling for us. And honestly, we just don't feel that way. And so James just comes at this thing. Now listen, you rich people. And it's like, oh, good, this isn't me. I don't have to really listen to this. But when we look at ourselves compared to the rest of the world, maybe we're doing okay. We don't feel it, but maybe we have something going for us we never really thought of before. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. It's gonna be hard stuff. And James just simply says, listen, you probably have more than what you think you have, especially when you compare yourself to other people. And if you could see what God sees, if you could see what might be coming down the path for you, it will mess you up. Like, if you could see what wealth and having things and the pursuit of those things, what that can do to you and what it could potentially do in your life, in your heart, in your relationships, like, it will mess you up and you're going to weep and wail. Like, it's going to just really, really mess with you. Verse 2, your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. It's really interesting. James, the culture that he's speaking into as he talks about this idea, to be wealthy in the culture of James, in the history of the world when James is living, to be wealthy there, one of the things that was a sign of wealth, check this out, one of the things that was a sign of wealth for these people was that they had an extra set of clothes to change into. Like that was if you had two or three or four sets of clothes, most people that are living in the time of James, you had like one set of clothes. You might have like a couple layers of garments, you know, like an outer garment you would wear when weather would get colder or nights when it get colder. But most people, they just had one set of clothes. Like that was it. That's all they had. But if you were wealthy in James' times, like you would have like a couple sets of clothes. Like you could change clothes. You wouldn't have to wear the same thing every single day. Some of us have entire rooms full of clothes, and the rooms are bigger than like some people have for their homes in this world. Like we have rooms full of these things. And James is just saying to them, listen, you have these things and they're not immune to decay. Even your most precious metals and wealth and stuff, they're not forever. We go, we get, and we live and we have all this stuff. And you just gotta understand, even your most precious metals, even the things that you think will last forever, won't last forever. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Here's something that's really important about what James is saying. James, and nowhere in Scripture do we ever find that having things is wrong. We never find that having wealth is wrong, that having things is wrong. What James is addressing, what Jesus addressed, what Paul addressed, what these guys would address with people is that desire for more, the pursuit for more. I don't have enough. I can never have enough. And we got to go. We're not there yet. It's the next level. It's the next target. And then we get there and it's like, oh, I'm not there yet. I got to go one more step. And what James is addressing is not that this stuff is wrong, not that wealth is wrong, not that riches is wrong, but that the pursuit for more is wrong. And he says, you've hoarded this stuff. You've accumulated it. Why do we do that? Because we think it protects us? Because we assume that it's for us and it's our consumption? We assume that, you know, this is my stuff. I've earned it. It's for my life. It's all for me. And James is just like, this pursuit for more. And then he's, and as he writes through this, that literally what we consider assets, James says, actually can become liabilities. You know, somebody passes away and they have a lot to leave to their kids and their grandkids. And we look at that person that, you know, they had a blessed life. They accumulated a lot. They were able to achieve a lot. But James says, no, actually, it's not an asset, it's a liability. And you're doing this and you're hoarding this stuff. And he kind of goes back to the idea of time in the last days. Throughout the history of the church, there's just been hope, this belief that Jesus promised that one day he's going to come back. That one day he's going to come back. And James, go back to that idea of time. James says, your time is limited. You don't even know how much time you have. And you're just being bogged down and you're pursuing stuff and you're pursuing more and it's never going to satisfy. In fact, it's not even going to last beyond you. And it can actually be a curse and a problem. When life becomes all about us, remember we've talked about this over these last weeks, when it's me, you know, in the center of the universe. My attitude towards time, my attitude towards wealth is just going to be off. It's not going to match up with what God says. Verse 4, look, he says, look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. You've defrauded people. You've taken advantage of people. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. God knows. God knows. When we cheat people, when we take from people, when we don't give people what they're due, when we don't give people what they deserve, when we take advantage of people, God knows these things. We're going to be accountable, James says. This isn't something, we're not operating in a vacuum. God knows, he hears that. Verse 5, you have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. James says, here's the danger of this stuff. It can quickly become all about us. It can quickly become all about more for us. It can quickly become, how do I get more? How do I achieve more? How do I receive more? And it becomes very, very toxic and dangerous into our lives. And he gives this picture, and it's a really, really harsh picture. Just like, you know, you feed a cow and you feed and you feed and you feed it, and there's only one purpose to feed it, to get it bigger and bigger, because one day it's going to go off somewhere and it's going to get slaughtered to feed people. And the cow doesn't even know. The cow just sees food in front of it, just eats and it eats and it eats and it eats. And James says, that's how we live sometimes. That's how we live. We want more. We go more. We want more. We eat more, and we're just always consuming, and we assume that it's all for us. And he's like, you're like that. You're like that cow that's just feeding itself, and eventually it's just gonna, the only purpose of its life is to be slaughtered. You don't even understand what you're doing. That in our culture today, when you look at just TV and print media and like radio, over 360 times a day, we are bombarded in this culture that we don't have enough. We need the bigger, we need the shinier, we need the newer, and that until we have those things, we're not good people. We're not going to be satisfied. We're not going to have a good life. 300, that's not even counting social media and the internet and all this stuff. And so what do we do as people? We get really smart, right? We have technologies, we have DVRs, you know, so we blast through those things. We have Netflix and Hulu, so we don't even have to watch those commercials. And it's like hundreds of times a day we are bombarded with this idea that we don't have enough. We need more. James says, you're doing this, and it's not that having it is wrong, but your heart, your attitude is pursuing more, more, more. And it's leading down a path, potentially, towards some really bad stuff. That you're going to be accountable for this. So what do we do? What do we do? Like, okay, maybe this none of this applies to us. Maybe this isn't where you are. Maybe the words that James writes, you know, it's for somebody else, whatever. But if there's even just a little sliver of truth in what James has to say, what do we do? Like, what? How can we possibly kind of work past this so this doesn't become us? What James is describing doesn't become us. I want to give you just a couple of things to think about this week, a couple of things to just mull over in your brain, some action steps that we can take, all right? First of all, we can learn how to be generous givers. Now, let me just put you at ease. This is not a giving sermon. We're not asking for more. We're not about ready to do something different, you know, here at the church and, hey, we need your money. It has nothing to do with that. For some of us, I know that some of you in your home, in your family, you work from a budget, you know, and you write stuff out and you say, okay, here's our expenses and here's our income, you know, and any really good business or successful business, you know, hospital, school, you know, any really good organization has a budget they work from. They know their expenses and they know their income and they kind of put a money to their name and all that good stuff. If you did that, or you do that, or if you don't, you should really try that and you should like sit down and actually like create a little bit of a system in your family and how this all works. But at the end of that, when you sit down and you do that, if you have a little bit left, even if it's $10, $50, you should consider on your budget just putting in a line item, generosity. And as a family, you could even do this, you know, together. You should take that and you should figure out every month, like, what can we do with that to, like, help somebody? A neighbor, somebody at work, a situation that you know about where somebody's hurting. What if we could learn how, in just even some small ways, just even with $10, $50, $100 every month, and we say, okay, this is money that we're going to use to just do something to help somebody else out and just be generous with them. Get them some food, help with some clothes, school starting, supplies. Like, what if we did that? What if we allowed ourselves to learn how not to make it about us, how not to hoard and consume and just pile it all in and this is for me and, you know, I've earned it, it's all about me. And what if we, even if it's just something very, very small, and we said, okay, let's just do something with this for good and let's just help somebody. Let's just do something for good. Now, I want to, specifically this morning, I want to say thank you to those of you who are part of Mill Creek who give, whether it's weekly or monthly, online or in service, whatever. I want to say thank you for those who do that in this place, who allow us to do the things that we do here. We've got 38 kids and leaders at youth camp this weekend. And the reason that we can do that and we can, you know, don't have to charge more is because of your generosity in allowing us to just do the ministry that God has called us to do. And let me tell you what's happened this weekend. I got a text from Cody last night. We've had 18 kids this weekend. 18 kids who have made first-time commitments this weekend to be followers of Jesus. 18 kids this weekend have made a decision. Yeah. You're a little bit more fired up than first service. I had to say, no, do you understand? Like 18. And some of our high schoolers, Cody was saying, have made decisions this weekend because we have an opportunity, because of your generosity, to put things into place in our calendar that allows our kids an opportunity to just get away from the normal and have an opportunity for impact in their life. Earlier this summer, we had like 50 or 60 elementary kids that were able to go to camp and do their camp. And we should charge like triple. If you've ever seen the camp they go to in the facilities, we should charge like triple. We don't have to because of your generosity. And I just want to say thank you. You know, as we head into Mobile Pack, we can do the things that we do here at the church because of what you do with us. And this idea of generosity is something that we can learn. It's something we need to teach our kids. It's something that we need to help our families learn. This is not about us. Learn the principle of enough. Learn the principle of enough. If there is one thing that we struggle with in this culture, is that we just never have enough. Our kids never have enough. Our students never have enough. We never have enough. It's always more. We got to have more. We got to get more. If I just had that one more thing, I would be happy. And then it's happy for like a couple days. And then it's like, oh, there's something new. There's something new. There's something new. We never have enough. That's what it feels like. We're always anxious and we're always worried of what we have. You remember your very first car? Remember your very, very first car that you had? My very first car that my dad got for me off an insurance agent up in South Bend was like $400. It was a 1979 Chevy Malibu, and that thing was a tank. It was a beast. It was awesome. It was four colors. Had like different colored doors. The front fender was a little different color, and you know the head stuff was coming down, and it had been sitting like in a barn for like 30 years. It was just old and smelly, but it was mine. It was awesome, and I didn't care. I was like one of the first of my friends, circle friends that could drive, and so you know we're driving all over the place and we're just having fun. And like during Christmas break, after Christmas. We were out driving around late one night, and people like put their Christmas trees out in the, you know, out for the trash to take, and one had like blown in the street. I'm like, hey, watch this, you know, and I'm like barreling through the tree. It was awesome. It exploded everywhere. A couple days later, my dad's like, why is there stuff in your grill? Like, well, I don't know. There was this tree out in the middle of the road. I couldn't avoid it. I just had to drive. They always find out, right? They always find out. And Mason's finding out. We always seem to find out, dude. We always seem to know. It was a tank. It was awesome. You knew who cared. Just drive it and just go crazy. But then, like, you get your first car that you buy yourself, right? The first one you, like, save up, and it's, like, your first car. And then you get a little scratch on it. You're like, oh, you know, you get a little ding in it or something happens to it and it, like, drives you crazy. This is kind of how it goes for us, right? We just never seem to have enough. It's just like never good enough. And we're always anxious about stuff. We're worrying about stuff. We're scared of stuff happening. If we could just learn how to be content. If we could just learn. Instead of like living out like as James describes. If we could just learn how to be content. Oh, man. That would solve a lot of problems in our life as it relates to this whole issue. Decide which reward you want to earn. You're going to have to make a decision in your life which reward you want. There's a lot of rewards on this side of heaven. There's a lot of rewards in earth. You know, the promotion, you know, more, you know, having bigger, better stuff, you know, having the applause of people. You know, those feel good in the moment. They're nice to have. But James says those are all temporary. James says none of those last. Even our most precious items that we think will last forever, James says, eventually decay and rust and corrode. They don't last. You're going to have to decide in your own mind, in your own heart, which reward you are after, which reward you are pursuing. That's a decision that you have to make. And here's the danger of these words of James, okay? Here's the danger of what we work through this morning. It is really easy to assume that we use these words like to judge other people. It's really easy to judge other people. Oh, my brother-in-law bought a new boat. What a jerk. You know, he doesn't care about anybody. Self-indulgence and luxury, you know? And we use these words and like we judge other people by it. Listen, that's not what these words are about. They're not about judging other people. They're about looking into our own heart. You don't even know what's going on in that other person. You don't know. You don't know what they're trying to do. You don't know their generosity lying on them. You don't know what they're doing. You can't judge other people. This is something that we have to look in our heart. And here's the trouble with that, okay? The trouble with that is we always default to our strength. I got it. I'm good. This is not a problem for me. I got this one figured out, man. I'm all about Jesus. I love Jesus. I love doing the work of Jesus. I love, you know, helping his kingdom. I love, and we always default to strength. We very rarely default to weakness. And on this one, it's just really, I know, good. And we talk big, you know, we have big words, you know, big talk, you know, big talkers. But honestly, and this is maybe where some of us need to do just to kind of see, okay, is there any bit of me in this anywhere that James is talking about? When you pull out that statement, when you pull out your financial stuff and you look at it, you're going to tell pretty quickly, is it about you or are you interested in things bigger than you? Is this all about your kingdom? Is this all about your pile? Is this all about protecting you? Is all of this just about helping you be comfortable? Or are we really serious about what James says? Are we really serious about what Jesus says? Because Jesus talked about this all the time. James talked about that. We've looked at widows and orphans. Helping the people who have less. Helping the people who are outside looking in. Helping the people who are a mess. And so these are just a couple things that we can think about, we can look at, but be very, very careful that you don't take these words of James and use them to judge other people. You don't know their heart. The only person that you should use these things on is yourself. Where am I? What are we doing? Are we going in the right direction? And look honestly at that. This is a hard one. And James has some really harsh words, really tough pictures that he creates on this arena, because it's a big deal. Time and wealth, two big opportunities for us to do really, really well or have some pretty big struggles.